Okay, so as he said, I'm a PhD student at North Carolina State University, and I was asked to talk a little bit about the research that I've been doing for my PhD. So just to go through an overview, I'll give you a brief introduction, make sure we're all on the same page about what I'm talking about. Most of my research has been in dairy cattle, but I think hopefully if we make it through, I think some of it can be applied to beef cattle as well. I'll then go into my research, and I divided that up into three parts. So the first part being the data editing and validation, and then the second part being a genetic analysis based on pedigree information, and then a genomic analysis where we use the 50K SNP data. And then a brief discussion and just some conclusions. So I thought I'd start with just a definition of functional traits. It gets used a lot when you start talking about health traits. And so the functional traits are going to be those traits that don't increase your production, but they're going to increase your animal's efficiency by decreasing the input costs. So if you think about a health trait, it's not necessarily increasing your production, but it does have an effect on that production. And so it's one of those functional traits. You're not selecting it for production, but it has an effect. Other traits that go along as functional traits, things like fertility and longevity, you're not really getting paid for longevity, but the longer your cow gets to stay in the herd, the less input you have to put into replacement. So functional traits are going to be lowly heritable in general, but because they do have an impact on production, they do have a high economic value. So when we break down into, you know, the basic equation of what a phenotype is made of, and we have the genetic effect and the environmental effect, the lowly heritable traits are going to have a small percentage of the total variance that's attributable to the genetics, but they're going to have a much larger portion that's attributable to the environmental. So nutrition, management, everything like that's going to play a large portion for these traits. So as I said already, the health traits will have a large impact on the overall production and therefore profitability of your cattle. So for my research with dairy cattle, if people immediately think milk production, the health traits are going to impact their milk production. If they get sick, it generally decreases their production, fertility along those same lines. But then on the other hand, if you think about beef cattle and say you're producing calves, if your beef cow gets mastitis, it may decrease her milk production, which is then in turn going to decrease how well her calf is growing and affect the calf's weaning weight as well. And I know that some studies have also shown that the respiratory diseases and things like that will decrease the average daily gain and weight gain as well. So on the other, another aspect of this that is also important to think about is that consumers are wanting a product that they can know is produced with high welfare, high health. They want to know that it was a healthy, happy animal that they're getting. And so we need to increase the health in order to remain competitive with everyone else in the world. And we want to be able to say that our animal products are healthy, they're good, they're well taken care of, and that sort of thing. So the healthy cows, to make them more profitable, you're going to have less management costs that you're putting into them. You don't have to separate them. You don't have as much to deal with. As far as that goes, you don't have to call the vet out as much. That's going to decrease the veterinary costs. And you may have less replacement costs because those cows are healthier. They can stay in the herd longer. So health traits are important, as we probably already all knew. But selection can be difficult. It's not something that's easily measurable. You can't just stick the cow on a scale and say, oh, it's healthy. Even though that would be really nice. It's also subjective, kind of like body condition scores and things like that. I may look at a cow and say, yeah, she's pretty healthy. Somebody else may look at a cow and say, no, I think she's starting to get sick. There's also many different traits. There's reproductive traits. There's metabolic traits. You know, which traits do you want to pay most attention to? You want some sort of general measure of the overall health. And again, there's a multitude of factors that go into play when you're talking about health. There's nutrition, there's food management, there's the weather that's going on outside where your herd is. the temperature, how humid it is, all of those things are going to have an impact on your cow's health. But the improvements that you can make through selection will be permanent, so that's the good part. So throughout the United States, there's no unified or mandated system for either beef cattle or dairy cattle. So if you want to collect phenotypes, you either have to design some sort of study and like a case control type design and measure it that way, or you can get data that's already reported voluntarily. So for dairy cattle, the USDA AIPL has created a data format that's called Format 6. And they created that in order to facilitate the collection and exchange of health records, but that's completely voluntary. Producers don't have to use it. They can use it by choice to help them in managing their herd if they want to. So just a little bit of details about that, because that is what my data was. So Format 6, up to 20 health events can be defined for each record. They currently have 20 standardized definitions. So like mastitis, they have representative MAST, retained placenta, RETP, lameness, and so on. There are also 4 general management codes. So things like temperament measures, representative TENP, or locomotion scores. And there's also an additional field where the producer can put any additional remarks or details if they want to do that. All of that is fully voluntary. You don't have to fill out the included details if they don't want to. And so now I'll move into the research that I've been doing. So the main overall objective was to investigate the use of producer-reported data that's collected on-farm computer systems for the genetic improvement of dairy cattle throughout the United States. We want to use this data in order to examine relationships between the different diseases, as well as between diseases and production traits. And then with all of this information, we wanted to develop an optimized genomic selection scheme in order to select animals that are both good producers as well as healthy animals. So part one, the data editing and validation part, there were some questions we wanted to answer with this part. Can the producer-reported data serve as a reliable source of information for health events? So are these data, can they be used for disease incidents? And going along with that, do they reflect the true incidents that we would expect and that's been shown in veterinary and epidemiological studies? And if we look at this data and examine the relationships between them, do these phenotypic relationships reflect what we expect that we know from biology and previous knowledge? So to start with just the 2 data sets that I had, the Format 6 health data, there were over 8 million raw records of health information. And then I also had the corresponding production data, which is the Format 4 through the USDA, and about 1.8 million records. So obviously with that much data, I had to start somewhere and just apply some general editing. So for both data sets, the general editing constraints that we put in place, the records had to be from the United States. It had to be a cow record with an identification. There were shown that just didn't have IDs. We wanted to focus on the lactations 1 through 5, since that was the most prevalent period of time for the cows to have records. We focused on lactations lasting less than 365 days in length. And then within the production data, they could identify whether or not the cow was terminated during the lactation period. And so in order to not have records from cows that did not complete their lactation, we included only the ones that had full lactation records. The health record passed all of those, went on to the next editing criteria, which was a minimum constraint. We want to make sure that the herd years we were including actually were reporting the disease we were looking at. We didn't want to use Farm B and they're not actually reporting metritis. So So in order to limit this down, we use only purveyors that had at least one incident reported, and they had to have at least 5 cows within their herd that year. So then to help information past that, it went on, and we put a maximum constraint on the incidents as well. So the incidents had to be within the range of 2 standard deviations of the mean. We didn't want records from herds that were over-reporting, so they could have been just over-reporting, or they could have been using an acronym to represent some sort of management or preventative measure, as opposed to actually reporting a illness or diagnosis. So if the records passed all of those editing, they moved on and we used them. If not, we removed them. From there, we calculated one of 2 different incidences depending on how long a period the cow generally experienced the disease. So for events with a short period of risk, we calculated the lactational incidence rate, or LIR. And so for that, I gave the formula up there. It's the number of first occurrences of a specific disease in a lactation divided by the number of lactations at risk. So on the other hand, for events that had a longer period of risk, such as mastitis or lameness, we calculated the incidence density, or IV. And so that was the number of first occurrences of a specific disease divided by the sum of the number of cows at risk starting lactation plus the number of cows at risk ending the lactation divided by 2. So in order to kind of compare what we were calculating from the producer-reported data versus what had been previously reported, we went through the literature and collected lots of incidence rates that had previously been reported. So from 1979 to 2011, we had incidence rates that were gathered. For most events, we used at least 10 citations. The only exception to that were diseases that are more commonly found in calves, and those were things like respiratory diseases or diarrhea that we were only looking at cow information, and those were more generally studied in calves. So because we used so many different types of studies, the direct comparison between the incidents that we calculated versus all of the incidences in literature is very difficult. So everyone, they used different populations, different types of cows. They're in different countries. You can't just compare apples to oranges. But the hope was that if we looked at a range of instances that were reported, we'd kind of see if the producer reported data fell within that range of what was generally expected. So that was what we were hoping to lend support to our value. So this chart shows the range of incidences that we calculated from the literature in the box plots, and then the red asterisk shows what our calculation was from the producer reported data. So in general, the producer reported data fell within that range of what had been reported in literature, so that was good and lent support to what we were doing. In general, it was below the mean that was reported that we calculated from literature, but we tend to think that that could be something due to the producers only using it as a management tool as opposed to just reporting diagnoses. So then for the second part of validating the data, we did a relationship analysis. We wanted to see if the data exhibited relationships that we expected to occur. So one of the questions was, does an animal who experiences health event X, say dystocia, have an increased probability of experiencing some other health event later, mastitis? Just 2 random examples. And at the same time, along those same lines, does an animal experiencing a health event, for this one, say lameness, have an increased probability of experiencing lameness again later in that lactation? So to do this, we use path diagrams to allow possible routes of causation to be developed. And to do this, we made the assumption that the diseases occurred sequentially throughout lactation. And this isn't true, but we had to make some simplification in order to develop this. So what we did was took the mean days in milk of occurrence, so the day in lactation that the animal first had the disease, and used that to order the diseases in a timeline. And so most of the health events are going to occur within the first 60 days of lactation, and so all the results that I show are generally from that first 1 to 60 days, but we did look at 60 to 90 days and 90 to 150 as well. So health data is going to be a binary trait. Either they were sick and they had some disease, or they were healthy and did not. So it doesn't follow that nice normal distribution that we like to assume. So to analyze the data, we used a generalized linear model using logistic regression, where our dependent variable was eta, and that was the logit of observing the health event that we were looking at. Beta was our factor of fixed effects, where we had herd, parity, year, breed, and season, and then X is going to be that incidence matrix corresponding to those. So if we break this down a little bit further and look in a little bit more detail, we say the probability of observing a health event, let's just say for simplicity, it's mastitis. And that probability is going to be pi. So then our odds are going to be pi, which is the probability of mastitis, over the probability of no mastitis. So then that logit from the previous slide is just going to be the log of that ratio. So then when we fit the logistic regression to it, our coefficient estimates from that are going to be equal to the log odd ratios. So when we do that, an odds ratio equal to 1 is going to be indicative of no association between the health event that's our dependent variable and a health event that we're seeing if it occurred earlier has any effect. And then odds ratios that are greater than 1 are going to indicate stronger associations. So because we had quite a bit of data, we put in place a sort of sampling scheme in order to fit and determine what the final model should be for each health event. So we took the total health event data set and sampled 100 herds from it without replacement, and then we did this 20 times. So for each of those 20 samples, we included fixed effects of herd, parity, year, season, and breed in all the models, and then we took all of the health events that occurred prior to the one that we were fitting. And we used forward and reverse regression to see if they were significant. So for each of those, we did that 20 times. And so if a prior health event occurred in more than, or was significant in more than half of those, which would be 10 or more, then we included it in the final model. If it didn't, then we left it out. Okay, so before jumping into the entire set of results, I'm going to go through just like one disease. So we'll start with displaced atomism. And the number in parentheses there is the mean days in milk of occurrence. So it's 25. Then if we look for all the diseases that on average occurred before it, we have dystocia, retained placenta, and ketosis. So all of those were put in the forward and stepwise regression 20 times, and ketosis and retained placenta were the ones that showed up more than 10 times, or more than half. So we put those in the final model and got the log odds estimate. So for retained placenta, the log odds was 2.62. So animals that had a previous case of retained placenta had 2.62 higher odds of getting a later case of displaced atomism. And then for ketosis, the odds were 15.5 times higher that the animal would then later have a case of displaced atomism, which that relationship we found in literature, so that seemed to go along pretty well. So when you do that for all the health events that we had, and put it all together, you get something that looks like a plate of spaghetti. But One thing that is important to note is those the health events occurring earliest are going to be in the top left of the diagram. Those have many lines coming from them. So that's sort of indicative that those early health events are going to have influences on health events occurring later. So that was an important overall note. And then we also had some pretty strong odds ratios, going from ketosis to displaced apomixin that we saw earlier, and then from retained placenta to nephritis, which both have been shown in literature that they are associated. So from that analysis, we wanted to look and see, okay, so mastitis and lameness, they can occur multiple times throughout lactation. So if an animal has a case of mastitis, say early in lactation, is it more likely to have another case of mastitis later? So we, instead of just including the previous health events, we included previous cases of mastitis as well as lameness. So for animals that had a case of mastitis from 0 to 60 days, the odds ratio was 2.94 that they would have a second case of mastitis between 61 and 90 days in milk. Then if you look at mastitis from 0 to 90 days in milk, the animal had 2.83 higher that they would also have a second incidence of mastitis from 91 to 150 days in milk. We did the same thing for lameness, from 0 to 60, having an effect on 61 to 90. Those results weren't significant, but when you looked at from 0 to 90 days and then having a second incidence from 91 to 150 days of milk, the odds ratio was 1.93. So now we're going to move on to the genetic analysis part. We wanted to see if the health traits have a genetic component and whether genetic selection would be possible and what the heritabilities were. So for this analysis, we wanted to estimate heritabilities from these common health events occurring from 1996 through 2012. We applied the same editing as we did in part one with the data editing and validation. We used only U.S. records. We included 31 through 5, and we put those minimum and maximum constraints to make sure that no one was under or over reporting. I fit a SIRE model using ASREML. We used the fixed effects of parity in year season and a random per year effect, and the random SIRE effect that we included with the pedigree information. We did two analyses with first lactation only records as well as lactation 1 through 5. You can see in both analyses the highest heritability was found for displaced apomixin. Where our hypothesis of this is that it's a more serious disease, but predictor is more likely to have been called a vet and is more likely to be reported consistently than some of the others. Some of those with the lower heritabilities are some of the more general disease or even disease categories that we had, such as reproductive problems or digestive problems, and lameness is going to be something that's a lot more influenced by the environment. So then what I did was I took the SIRE PGA that we calculated from those analyses for each disease. And I took the top 10 SIRES and the bottom 10 SIRES. And then I took their daughters. And for each of them, I calculated the incidence rate among those top SIRE daughters and the bottom SIRE daughters. And the results were what you see here, where the worst SIRE daughters are in red. And you can see for all of them, they have a higher lactational incidence rate for the disease. And then the best SIRE daughters are in gray, and they all have lower incidences of disease compared to the worst SIRES. So from there, we fit a multiple trait model. The fixed and random effects were the same as as the previous. And the traits included in the analysis were cystic ovaries, dysplasia adnexum, ketosis, lameness, mastitis, metritis, and retained placenta. Here are the results from those analyses. Along the diagonal are the heritabilities. Again, the highest heritability was for dysplasia adnexum, which was 0.13. And then below the diagonal are the estimated genetic correlations. And I've highlighted the two that were the very strong associations in the logistic analysis. And we see that they also have very strong genetic correlations, both between retained placenta and metritis and displaced adnexum and ketosis. So then to move on to the genomic analyses, we want to see if the genomic information would improve our ability to select healthier animals when we use that user-reported data. We wanted to see if the reliability of the green values that we estimated would increase when we added that genomic information in. So, genomic information is supposed to improve the progress that we can make. But what is it actually acting on? So, here I have the key equation, or the Breeder's equation, where we have genetic progress per year. So we have the genetic gain that we can make each year. We have the reliability, which is how certain we are about an animal's prediction. So genomics can increase this. And then the selection intensity, or how choosy we are when picking which animals to mate. Genomics isn't really going to change this, but you can increase it with management. The genetic variance is the variance in the population due to genetics. We can't really change that much, but the generation interval can be improved by using genomic information so we can get that data as soon as an animal is born. So for the genomic analyses, we use a single-step method where it allows the incorporation of pedigree and genomic information all in one step. So if you look at the traditional flop analysis that you use, and we have the additive relationship matrix that's the A inverse. For the single step method, all we did was replace that A matrix with an inverse H matrix. And so the blended H matrix is shown here. And so it combines both the genomic information that you have and the additive relationship information that you have from the pedigree. And so here the G is the relationship matrix based on genomic information, and A22 is the additive relationship matrix between those genotype animals. And all you're doing there is taking away the additive part of those genotype animals so you don't double count them. So the benefits of single step are that you can estimate the various components and the effects all at once. And it's easy to implement for complex data sets and models. So threshold models and random regression, they're easy to implement using this method. However, it can be computationally expensive because you do have to make that H inverse, but they are developing ways to get around this and make it faster. So we have 50 case SNP data. It's about 7,800 bulls. And single step method was used using threshold gates from the UGA group. Fit a multiple trait model, which is the same as before, with the same diseases as before. The only thing that changed in this case was the random sire effect. Instead of using the additive relationship matrix, we're using the blended H matrix. And so just some preliminary results that we have gotten so far. The full analysis is currently running. The heritabilities are about the same as we were getting before. Mastitis is about 8 to 10%. Metritis is at 4%. And lameness is pretty low at 1%. However, when we look at the gain in reliability, when we look at those calculated with pedigree information versus those that we calculated using the genomic information, we get a pretty good increase in their reliabilities. So anywhere from, I think, 25% up to 37% for mastitis and metritis, we get a percent increase in the sire's reliabilities. So now I'll just wrap it up with some discussion and conclusions, or so what does all this mean? So for data editing and validation portion, we provide evidence that the producer-reported data can serve as a reliable source of information for health phenotypes. The incidence rates were similar to those that you would expect to see if you went back and designed a study and looked at literature and see how those compared. And improvements could always be made with more consistent reporting or a standardized reporting system. For the genetic analysis, we show that there was a health, or that health events do have that genetic component. They are locally heritable, as we would expect for functional traits and for health traits. But reasonable improvements must be expected. So they're locally heritable, but they are heritable. So we have to look at the long term and know that these are largely influenced by environment, but we can still improve them. For the genomic analyses, the genomic information did improve the reliabilities of the breeding value estimates of the sires, and the genomic information can decrease the generation interval, which will allow us to make progress more quickly. So, as I said at the beginning, herd health is closely related to productivity and therefore profitability. And healthier cows are going to be the more profitable cows. They don't require as much input cost. Again, many phenotypes are needed. It's a lowly heritable trait. More phenotypes you get, the better it's going to be. We need to keep good records, and we need to focus on the long-term results, because that improvement that we make is going to take a little bit longer than safer production traits with higher herd abilities. And along those same lines, events should be recorded as consistently as possible. So there's no question as what certain acronyms stand for in one herd and those type of discrepancies that you can see with the data. And so with that, I'd like to acknowledge my advisors, Christian Maltekin, Joe Cassidy, John Cole at USDA, and John Clay at DRMS have both helped with this, and then our funding sources. And with that, I'll take any questions.